Welcome to the Month End, a CPG community chat. The Month End will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational worlds. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands, as well as other key contributors to the industry, all of which have vast experiences and insights that will be shared with the audience. Episode 16 with David Kruch from Ritual Beverage. David is the CEO of Ritual Beverage. David, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on here.
Right. So very exciting. The world of non-alcoholic liquor, wine, beer world keeps expanding. So excited to have you on to chat about Ritual. So give me a little background on Ritual Beverage and kind of where you guys came from, where you're at now, and just kind of give this little idea of the brand at the end of the day.
Yeah, of course. So Ritual started with my best friend and business partner, who's a full-time novelist, wanting to just cut back and drink a little less. We both love our cocktails, love having a few drinks at night. And he was trying to create something that would stand up, would mark a moment, you know, make a meal better, enhance the evening, but not feel like garbage the next day. And I was at his house one night for just a night of hanging out. And he had a slew of interesting ingredients on the countertop. And I was like, what are you making? And he's a good enough chef. And he goes, try this. And I gave me a drink and I took a drink and I said, wow, that is awful. What the hell are you doing to me here? Why are you giving me this? And he explained what it was, what he was trying to do. And I was like, all right, I dig it. I totally get the notion. And it kind of stewed with me for a while. And I have a background as an entrepreneur in CPG. And towards the end of the night, I said, you know, if that drink could actually approximate the flavor profile of known spirits, if that could be analogous to a gin or a whiskey or a tequila, we'd be onto something. Then we would have almond milk, the impossible burger. We'd have the ability for people to still enjoy the activity they enjoy, make their cocktail, have it, minus the alcohol, minus the calories. And that just set us off on this path of, can this be done? Can we go to the right distillers and flavorists? Can we get all of the right pieces together to create a true liquor alternative? And that's exactly what we did with Ritual. We made it happen.
Awesome. So now you're selling whiskey, gin, tequila, vodka, non-alcoholic, right?
Yeah. Gin, whiskey, tequila, and rum alternatives. Yeah.
What is the top seller? Like what is the
clients? You know, it flip flops seasonally between tequila and whiskey. Actually,
nice.
Rum is brand new. It just won a Nexty Award at Expo East Natural Food Show. It might be my favorite, but it's also the newest. So there's a novelty factor there. And then tequila just won a platinum medal with 98 points through BTI. That is crazy. It's the highest rated quote unquote tequila they've ever rated. So the highest rated spirit alternative of all time, and higher than any traditional real tequila. It's one of the top 12 items of thousands they've ever ranked. So very, very proud of the products.
That's crazy. Crazy. Good stuff. So clearly tequila season's kind of wrapping up, moving into whiskey season then with the cold coming in, the sweater up there in the balmy Midwest, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sweatering today and the whiskey sounds fantastic right now.
There you go. So you're the CEO. So like you guys have been in business, what, 2, 3, 4 years now? Is that right?
Yeah. Our first sale was online September of 2019. So we kind of just crossed over 2 full years of sale. Prior to that, we, you know, a good year and a half of R&D development, getting everything buttoned up. And then to market in 2019.
Awesome. 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 So CEO, that's your role. What are you focusing on now? What did you focus on? What key hires have you made kind of the last 2, 3, 4 years?
Yeah. That's such a fun journey. You know, you start off, it was myself and 2 co-founders, Marcus and his wife, Gigi Sankey. And you do everything. You know, you wear every single hat, you're involved in every single part of the business, and you slowly begin to hire and let pieces of the company slide off onto other people. And we've done a really great job in hiring. We have a 14 person team now that is every single person's a rock star. There's the trust we have in our teammates is the way we're able to grow and get as much done as we can with 14 people. So I, my background is CPG. I love the sales process. So I'm still heavily involved on the sales side of things, but it's also time to, you know, take that larger step back, look at the entity as a whole, look at where this thing is going, make sure that we're making all the right decisions for both the brand and this whole entire category. And we feel a real responsibility for growing this brand new category, because it is so important. And as leaders in this category, it's up to us to make sure that people's first experience is the right one. So that's my focus now, is really driving the company forward and trying to maximize the efficiency of all of the employees.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. As myself, I enjoy, you know, drinking some cocktails and some beers and stuff. But it's interesting because what you just said is an interesting point, because the first time you drink something in a new space or a new, you know, product line, or, you know, it's kind of like if you have a bad experience, you're like, even if the add-on ones are better, you know, you look at like the White Claws, right? And now everybody compares them to the White Claw, right? And so that's a interesting situation. So from a sales perspective, sales channels, so where do you sell your products at? Like, clearly online, but where else, and kind of what are you targeting moving forward?
Sure. So, you know, the plan for this has always been retail, liquor, and grocery. And that's where it's going to win. But pandemic hit, and we were just rolling out into one major retailer, and everybody else, as you well know, largely stopped taking sales calls and definitely stopped trying to build brand new categories inside stores where there's going to be zero discovery. So we really pulled back and focused on direct-to-consumer sales, straight through our own website and, of course, on Amazon, which is really how every brand should start. You get the opportunity to speak directly to your consumer. You learn your own voice and the voice that works for that consumer. Learn who they are, what they like, how to get a hold of them, and then build out from there, take that same message into brick-and-mortar retail. So we've had terrific success on Amazon, capturing, at one point in time, 43% of non-alcoholic sales on Amazon, which is amazing, and very equitable sales on our own website, you know, getting a better customer experience, navigating through the site and learning all about the brand and the many facets of the company, and then getting to end with our bottle in your cart. But now it is a retail rollout focus. We just launched in about 140 Whole Foods, which is very exciting for us. The Whole Food consumer and our consumer has a whole lot of overlap. That Venn diagram is basically a circle, and that's who we're looking for. People who want to have a good life and experience everything they want to experience, but not miss out on anything. And that's what we offer here at Ritual. We're also launching into a handful of Kroger banners nationwide next year, which is very exciting. And even more exciting than both of those things is that Whole Foods is really kind of championing this entire category. They realize how important it is, and they're putting out a better for you end cap in all 510 stores for January and February of next year. So for dry January, you'll be able to go to any Whole Foods, even if they don't have a spirits department, and find Ritual on the shelf.
Yeah, it's a completely new journey for the customer of online shopping for liquor. Not liquor, is wait, I can buy this online. And additionally, like, you know, I live here in South Carolina and they have the ABC stores, so you can't buy them in a grocery store. But if you go to Whole Foods and you see this non-alcoholic liquor, you're like, wait, this is weird. Very cool. Well, congrats so far on all of that. So from a aspect of relating to, you know, enjoying your, or the sales channels that you have, like, what, you know, you stated that, like, going direct to consumer, you're able to kind of communicate directly to customers, able to basically get feedback directly from them. Now that you're expanding into retail, I guess, two-part question. Do you have, like, a favorite that you enjoy tackling, or are they all of them? And then number two, then how do you assess the success of each of those? Like, do you have specific metrics that you look within each sales channel, or is it shared metrics, or do you kind of see how they complement each other? So just kind of give me a little background on your experience with that.
Sure. Yeah. So we're constantly reviewing the data. We're a very data-driven company. So every month we're digging in as deep as we can on all things e-commerce. We're looking at our own website sessions versus Amazon, conversion rate on our own website versus Amazon, average order value between the two, number of orders, are they up, are they down? What bundles people buying? What different products are coming together to work, both just within our own products on our own website or within the full cart situation for Amazon? So that gives a lot of data. We get to understand kind of consumer buying habits at that point in time and kind of where they're leaning and why they're purchasing. When it comes to in-store traffic, it's all about shelf velocity. It's all about moving products off the shelf. No one wants to have a product just sitting there and not getting sold. And when your product's $28, $29, the store needs that thing to move. They give you a little bit more grace period because it's not a $2 item, but it needs to fly. And that's, at the end of the day, the retailers are happy if you do two things right. If you support them, you know, they make a lot of their revenue not selling your product. They make a lot of your revenue because you chose to buy into whatever program they deem to be very effective, and your products are churning through their system. That velocity just helps everyone. It helps the brand, it helps the distributor, it helps the retailer. Everybody wins when you're moving fast. And to make that happen, you put together, you know, whatever the perfect marketing plan is for your company and for your product, some combination of digital and on-premise and out-of-home experience that everyone can walk into a door knowing that your product exists and having seen it before and being comfortable making that purchase.
Are you looking at different like margin analysis by sales channel, like specifically Absolutely. Like Amazon's, you know, mm-hmm. business model is essentially different than your Shopify website, different than your on-prem? Are you looking at different numbers? And if so, which ones?
So constantly. So there's a give and take to it. Amazon is our worst margin across the board. And it's for a few reasons, for the fees that they take. And we have significantly different packaging for Amazon. We have our own exterior box that's protecting glass. It's not cheap. It's branded, right? There's more cogs going into an Amazon or any kind of e-commerce sale than there is brick and mortar. But you get a phenomenal experience. You get to interact with the brand. You get to have a conversation. There's an advertising play there that makes it worth it. That kind of marketing play makes that lesser margin a good deal, at least for now, right? Absolute best margin is our own website. And we still have higher COGS, but significantly less people in the middle of that taking a piece of the pie. Probably the best overall customer experience too, because you get to have every question you could ever have answered right in front of you on your phone, computer, tablet, whatever it may be. Next best is a retail margin. We have some retailers that we sell direct to. So we're cutting out the distributor in some instances, or we're using a clearinghouse that is kind of a pseudo distributor with a much, much better margin as well. That's phenomenal. And then you go full distribution, full sales team, takes a significant hit, and you got to be prepared for that. You got to be ready and understanding that your $28 item is going to give you $13 back.
Yeah. It's completely different. Gross margin analysis, contribution margin analysis by sales mm-hmm. channel. Are you guys, does the big natural food distributors, do they actually distribute you guys? Or do you guys have like drink specific distributors?
So that's been a really, really interesting process that we've been going through this whole time. When I started this, I had a lot of background working with natural grocery distributors, UNFI, yep. KE, a lot of familiarity, yep. thinking, well, this fits in perfect there. This is great. Yep. What's happened is it all comes down to the preference of the store buyer. Maybe they are very happy to go through natural grocery, but if they're the spirits buyer and they've never ever worked with UNFI or KeHE, they're not comfortable with that. And they would rather go through the patchwork of three-tier distribution, even yep. though it's incredibly complicated with different state-by-state rules. That's the game they play. Therefore, that's the game that we play. So we're doing both. We're doing natural grocery distribution and large three-tier distribution, depending on the account.
Interesting. Super complex on that three-tier system, but is what it is. So yeah, and I guess the last question or comment on kind of this kind of topic is, it is interesting with e-com versus, you know, the big box stores in terms of factoring in shipping, freight, packaging costs. Like that is a whole new world the last decade versus what it was before. So, you know, what are your experiences with that, or like some wins or losses within freight in, freight out, transfers, packaging, et cetera?
You know, it's such a, everything's still a learning process, you know? So Amazon, for example, our bottles can freeze, right? So we're shipping a glass bottle to Minnesota in February. And if you leave it out on your porch for a couple of days, forget about it. You got no chance. So significant breakage, right? That we were not accommodating for at the time, trying to fix that this year, of course. Very different than, you know, climate controlled trucks going out of a professional distributor and landing in a warehouse and then getting distributed to the store level. Different situation. So, you know, inventory management for us is critical. We're always very aware of what's been produced and when and where it's going because of the different types of packaging. Is it getting put into our six pack case wholesale or retail boxes, or is it going into the e-commerce? And is that going to Amazon or to our own website or to a different third party seller? So have to be highly aware of kind of every bottle made and where it's going and where it's been, which is getting more and more complicated as we're making hundreds of thousands of bottles versus, you know, hundreds of bottles.
Yeah. And actually I was just moving on to the inventory kind of management topics here. A couple questions on this. Number one, I'm assuming that because you sell in six different sales channels, you probably have, you know, on the supply chain procurement side, a lot of different folks that you touch. You know, you don't need to go into details on that. So you have to have all this web of information and data and money and inventory flow somehow situated in a manner to help you manage your business in a proactive manner. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah.
And how are you doing that from like systems or personnel standpoint?
Yeah. So a few things, you know, we do use Deer, which is a super helpful platform. We had a third party company build us out alongside our CFO and COO, an unbelievable model. It is this predictive model that takes everything from production forecasts through the P&L, through kind of predictive forecasting of sales by the week, by the month, by the quarter, by the year, all into one, you know, 47 tab model that is just amazing. And it is incredibly helpful. But what we do is we complete the production forecast, which cascades into that material forecast based on bill of materials and lead times. It's all semi-automated and integrated into that big financial model. We provide a annual material forecast to each preferred supplier. And then we kind of negotiate price breaks based on payment terms and quantity, of course. We try to get multiple bids on bigger ticket items when it comes to bottles, caps, labels, you know, things that are physical. We try to go out and shop that around a little bit, especially now as prices are going up everywhere across the board. We establish floor stocking arrangements with whether it's flavors or some of these physical materials, just to make life easier for everybody across the board. Then, you know, create and send those POs in Deer and receive the materials physically and also in Deer, of course, and then issue payments via the accounting team. So it's kind of just a nice, beautiful process that's all integrated into one big model that lets us kind of go to one place with 47 tabs and see it all.
Oh, 47 tab spreadsheets, gotta love them. So then you guys are doing this annually or being a very, you know, 12 month looking forward model and forecasting process. So a couple things on that. Yeah. That all sounds great in theory, and then in a vacuum it works perfectly. So two things. I'm assuming it doesn't work perfectly, even without looking at the last 18 months of society's lives with COVID and quarantine and supply chain issues, which is a whole other can of worms we can get into. But with that being said, like, how often are you revisiting it in a normal world, right? Like, is it still monthly? You're looking at it, you know, still communicating with suppliers, still moving ahead. You know, you may need to adjust things or push things up, right? So it's a constant push and pull once you get things in place.
Yep. So we completed our production forecast about 3 weeks ago for all of 2022. That being said, we link up on a production and sales forecast meeting every 2 weeks. So every 2 weeks, we dive into this big predictive model, look at what we think is going to happen over the next few quarters, adjust those numbers, and let it spit out any adjustments to the production forecast. You know, like right when COVID hit, no one knew what was happening next, right? We didn't know if zombies were coming out of the sewer or if this was going to be no big deal in a week. We had no idea. So we instantly made three models. We took the original model, and that was kind of the ideal model. We took one that we called slashed, and it was, here's everything. Everything is reduced. Everyone's budget's reduced. There's less of everything. There's less revenue. There's less marketing spend. Here's a slashed model that we can live in longer. And then here's a disaster model. We don't get another penny, and not another bit of revenue comes in for a couple of years. What next? And we went and lived in the slashed model for a little while. And we said, let's give this a good 4 weeks. Let's meet in a month. Met back up in a month. Well, sales are up. Okay. All right. Let's stay here again. Another month, sales are up. And we were able to just jump right back into the ideal original model, even during COVID after our switch over into an e-com focus. But we've kind of kept that cadence going. Every 2 weeks, it's a significant sit down to make sure that we're still on track in every capacity, looking as far forward as we can. Ideally, it's 18 months. It's usually a little less than that.
How are you factoring in cash flow into those decisions?
Yeah, and that's all there as well. You know, the cash flow part of the business is critical. You know, and running in the red is not at all uncommon. Thankfully, that gets to end this year, which is exciting. But making sure that cash flow is a part of it, a lot of those materials have to get purchased in advance, and in a lot of them, it's not even terms. It's pay us, and then we'll release the bottles. You know, they're under hostage. So cash flow is a big part of that. We have to have accurate cash flow numbers every meeting.
What's the craziest thing that's happened, like not even 18 months ago, the last like 90 days with these supply chain issues and shortages, like from a ritual standpoint? I'm sure that you...
Yeah, well, you know, our major glass supplier just let us know that this is the last time we're making glass in the US. Next time it's coming from India. What? That is very different. That's a very different lead time. A lot more things can go wrong as opposed to getting on a truck and going down the street. Now it's getting on a boat and cross your fingers. So that's a big deal. And that's always a big deal. Glass is hard to find right now. Not as hard to find as aluminum cans, but difficult. So making sure that we have kind of backups and redundancies for every material, you know, multiple people that can make glass, multiple companies that can make caps, et cetera, to make sure that we're never actually out of anything.
So basically you put together a very proactive annual forecast. You assess it every other week. You have different kind of scenarios within each situation. You have backup suppliers, backup areas to go in case somebody goes out of business or transfers their production to India. So it sounds like it's just a very proactive, huge, fluid process that there's no other way to say it, but you have to be constantly engaged in it.
Yes, constantly engaging and kind of asking the question, what's our weakest point now? You know, are we brittle, and where are we brittle, and how can we get some redundancies in place and some, you know, strap some things to that to make it less brittle? And that was just fun, because at first everything's brittle. At first, every single decision you make, if it doesn't work out, you're in trouble. Yeah. And then you start to get those backups in place, and you get to find who you need. And that now for us, that's kind of beginning to guide us into who do we hire next. We look at our brittle points and look at some of our ballers who are stressed out. How can we take weight off of those people and fix some of that thin ice and make sure it's a little bit thicker?
So then you have real-time access to inventory via deer inventory and everything else you have going on. You have real-time access to cash flow and just understand where you're at from a short-term, long-term perspective, and that helps those decisions. When you're negotiating or when you're reaching out to these suppliers, are you like able to negotiate for some of them, like discounts or upfront payment term discounts that then help your margins, right? Even though it may, you know, make the cash stick a bit longer, but is there any circumstances or like kind of recommendations or advice to somebody that's out there in the CPG world, like where like there is a couple wins or things you can get if you do, plan more proactively as you guys are doing?
Absolutely. And the two ways we get material discounts are economies of scale, and just having more success and buying more. And then the prepayment. And we've done some very interesting prepayment. One supplier, and this is how ridiculous this stuff can get. One supplier needed a certain amount of money to do something completely unrelated to what we were doing. They were having cash flow problems. We weren't. Okay, we will give you that exact amount of money. You will give us those bottles in advance at a significant cost savings, and it worked out. It had nothing to, none of it made sense. none of it made sense, except it absolutely worked out well for our bottom line.
Cash is king, man, right?
Cash is king. That, you know, that's a testament to getting the right investors, spending time on that, making sure that you have that. Because when you're always looking for the next few bucks, it becomes impossible to make those kinds of decisions.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So moving on to kind of KPIs you review, just kind of on a, you know, weekly, monthly, quarterly basis. So just what are some high level KPIs, you know, from a financial, operational, et cetera, that you review kind of, you know, whether it's weekly, monthly, or quarterly, just give a couple of those that you're focused on.
Yeah. So e-commerce is so wonderful because you do have insights into so much when it comes to KPIs. We're looking at lifetime value, reorder rate, people that are signing up for subscribe and save, both on our own website and on others. Getting that average order of value up as much as possible is a big deal for us. Getting our own website's conversion rate up is a big deal for us. It's just such a direct way to interact with the consumer and see what they're doing. When it comes to retail, it's getting those consistent orders, and kind of there's a moment in time with the retailer when you're no longer a risk. You know, they're making these very sporadic orders, ordering the bare minimum of product. It's very awkward. And then all of a sudden you get 7 POs at once that are, you know, broken out every month for the next 7 months. And you're a part of the bigger boys now. So for us, it's the biggest metrics are the AOV, LTV, you know, making sure that we can really build that customer, build that basket, and keep them forever. The subscribe and save number to me is one of the most fascinating. It's I've been buying things on Amazon for seemingly forever. I've never subscribed and saved to anything in my life, but there are people out there that are buying a ritual and they want it to arrive every month, just like Wi-Fi and water. They want it to be a part of your life. And that's a really beautiful thing. They don't want to think about it. They want it to just be there because they need it in their life for whatever reason, because someone's always pregnant, because they don't want to drink real alcohol, because just like gluten-free bread and almond milk, they want to have a nice option for whoever they happen to be hosting. Love that. That's one of my favorite stats, and a stat that grows every month, which is incredible.
Yeah, I'm with you. I never do the subscribe and save, because I'm like, well, what if I need it before then? Then I have to order it again and then change it.
So I'm just right.
Right. But it is interesting. So awesome. So basically, I guess, what's looking forward for Ritual the next kind of 12, 18 months? Anything new to come out, or any other kind of areas to tackle from a geographic or sales channel standpoint?
Yeah. So, you know, we're jumping deeper into three-tier distribution on the liquor side, which is really fun. You know, that's kind of a state-by-state rollout into both, you know, major chain retail and the thousands and thousands of independent liquor and grocery stores out there in the country. So that's really our next big step, is to kind of state-by-state domination of this category and really proving ourselves at retail. We've absolutely proven that we can do this in big chains. We've proven that we can make this work on e-com. And now I want to see it work up and down the street. And now that COVID is getting a little better and things are open, I want it to work on premise. I want to be able to walk into any bar in the country and order a Ritual gin and tonic, and the bartender knows exactly what that means.
Awesome. All right, to the final kind of layer of questions here, comments, some advice from David here. So what does one do and one don't for you, from your perspective?
The do, hands down, is to hire the right people so that you can trust in them completely. Trust is honest to God the currency that we use here to be able to be so efficient. And it works. You know, I'm in business with some of my best friends and people I just met, and we've become a family because of that trust. You can't have your hand in every single aspect of the business all day long, all the time, as you grow. You just can't. But when you can actually siphon that off from your mind and know that your person is handling that, you can then grow and look on top of the business and let the business grow again. So I think trust, it's not micromanagement, but it's not a lack of leadership either. It's just the ability to hire people that you trust and then do it.
I echo that from my experience as well. All right, now one don't.
The don't would be, don't move too fast until you're adequately capitalized. I think that people get an idea and they want to put their idea in their briefcase with a bunch of NDAs and run around and start the process and just build up, figure out how much money you're really going to need, plan, look forward. It's very easy to get tripped up with a lack of capital. And then you're spending all of your time trying to raise funds as opposed to trying to build your business and build your product and build your brand. And those are very hard to do at the same time. You have to do them at the same time, but get a good leg up, get 6, 12, 18 months of capital under your belt first, and then begin the process of building your brand and making your impact on the world.
Yep. Seems like it's one's much more proactive and less stressful versus one that's just reactive, chasing a tail that you don't know what's going on. And so even though as a small business owner, you're always going to have to be reactive in some capacity, if you could minimize that as much as possible, the best. So, well, David, this was awesome. Your insight was great. Love your guys' inventory kind of planning and purchasing model. And I hope the listeners love that too. So before we go out of here, best place to buy Ritual, best flavor, best cocktail, whatever, you know, give me the sales. Speak here. So
the recipe page on our website has been built out by some of the best bartenders in the country. So super fun there. But for me, so simple. Get the Ritual tequila alternative, make a margarita or a paloma. You will not be disappointed.
Awesome. That sounds fantastic. So David Kruch, CEO of Ritual Beverage Company. Really enjoyed the chat, David. Thanks so much, and have a good one. Hope you guys all enjoyed it.
Cool. Thank you, Brad.